The views expressed on Exopolitics Radio with Alfred Weber are those of Alfred Weber and not specifically those of 1480 KPHX or our sponsors. In 1944, Nazi Germany created the V-2 rocket military program. The rocket reached 100 kilometers, also known as the boundary to space.
Headline edition, July 8, 1947. The Army Air Forces has announced that a flying disc has been found and is now in the possession of the Army. Army officers say the missile, found sometime last week, has been inspected at Roswell, New Mexico, and sent to Wright Field, Ohio, for further inspection. Russia has demanded UN action to get all foreign military personnel out of Greece.
October 4, 1957. Under the mission name Sputnik 1, the USSR launches the first artificial satellite to be put in geocentric orbit. December 19, 1958, American President Dwight D. Eisenhower.
This is the President of the United States speaking. Through the marvels of scientific advance, my voice is coming to you from a satellite circling in outer space. Through this unique means, I convey to you and to all mankind America's wish
April 12, 1961, Russian Yuri Gagarin is the first man to travel into space aboard the rocket Vostok 1. May 25, 1961, American President John F. Kennedy.
Now it is time to take longer strides. Time for a great new American enterprise. Time for this nation to take a clearly leading role in space achievement, which in many ways may hold the key to our future on Earth. I believe that this nation should commit itself to achieving the goal before this decade is out of landing a man on the moon and returning him safely to the Earth.
Phoenix, Arizona, March 13, 1997. A mysterious formation of lights is seen hovering above the city. This incident, later known as the Phoenix Lights, was witnessed by, among others, Dr. Lin Ki-tai.
We call it the Phoenix Lights, but in fact, on March 13, 1997, while thousands of people happened to be looking up at the sky for a glimpse of the Hale-Bopp comet, which was very clear in the northwest sky on a very quiet, beautiful March evening, they also witnessed a mile to 2 mile wide formation of light. Some people say that they actually saw a craft traverse right over their heads, about 30 miles an hour, like gliding right over their heads, very low altitude. Some people did see it take off at a tremendous speed. Incredible technology, to be sure. And what was very eerie for most people was that it was totally silent. It was just a phenomenal parade that went through the state, from upstate Arizona all the way down to Tucson and then back to Phoenix. And this is over very many, many, many hours.
The year 2000. Futurist Alfred Lambermont Weber authors the book Exopolitics, Politics, Government, and Law in the Universe.
Exopolitics is the science of relations between our planet Earth and other intelligent civilizations in the universe. My book, Exopolitics, Politics, Government, and Law in the Universe, launched the science of exopolitics.
February 6, 2007, calls pour into the police and TV stations of metropolitan Phoenix when residents witness four mysterious lights near the horizon of the western sky at approximately 8 p.m.
If you look at a UFO encounter like the Phoenix lights or like others, that's actually a multi-dimensional communication. It's somewhat like a dream. A dream is a multi-dimensional communication from your subconscious mind to your conscious mind, and it tends to be constructed around certain symbolic communications. And psychologists can tell you that, and there are all sorts of dream dictionaries which contain the standard symbology by which dreams can be interpreted, and you can learn a great deal about what your subconscious mind is trying to tell your conscious mind by deconstructing and interpreting your dreams. Well, the context communication theory of extraterrestrial communication says that genuine UFO encounters, that is, encounters with extraterrestrial or ultra-dimensional intelligence, tend to be a multi-dimensional communications like a dream, and so that we can take these and we can interpret them symbolically according to standard things like what would be the equivalent of a dream context.
March 10, 8 p.m. Mountain Standard Time, Exopolitics Radio with Alfred Lambermont Weber premieres on 1480 KPHX.
This is Exopolitics Radio with Alfred Weber, and Exopolitics Radio is a weekly exopolitical public affairs talk show exploring the evidence and impact of intelligent, organized life in the universe on our human society. Exopolitics is a new political science of outer space. It is the science of relations between our Earth and advanced intelligent civilizations in the universe. Exopolitics is science-based. The Associated Press reported in January 2006 that Exopolitics had been nominated for 2005 Word of the Year. Exopolitics Radio's expert guests will, each week, deal with in-depth public affairs developments in exopolitics. Some of the public affairs topics that we will be dealing with include global warming and new energy, disarmament in outer space, disclosure, diplomacy with advanced intelligent off-planet cultures. Exopolitics Radio will draw on experts and researchers who are at the leading edge of exopolitics and knowledgeable about the ongoing impact of intelligent extraterrestrial civilizations on our human society. If we look at the basic exopolitics model, which is that the universe is highly populated with intelligent advanced civilizations operating under universal law with some form of governance systems, you can say it would be something akin to a federated system. And there are federated systems, of course, on Earth. If you look at the European Union, for example, that's a federated system. If you look at different other constitutional systems, for example, that of the U.S., the United States of America is a federated system, such that the central government, the federal government, can take certain actions which affect the individual components, for example, the states. Well, similar principles apply, and we know this from exopolitics research. with regard to the apparent governance forms that exist out in the universe, that exist, for example, even here in our own Milky Way galaxy. Our solar system, Sol 3, is part of a larger galaxy, which is revolving around a large black hole. It was discovered a number of years ago that at the center of our galaxy, there's a large black hole, which is like a collapsed sun. This is by way of setting up the concept so that we understand what it means to be quarantined. And what that means is that apparently, and again, we're at the very beginnings of our universe understandings. As I say in my book, Exopolitics, I say caveat lector, which means reader beware. We're at the very beginnings of universe understandings, and so I take full responsibility for any errors of understanding, but this is sort of the best information that we have now. And from a variety of sources, what appears to possibly have happened to our sector of the galaxy, to perhaps our contiguous solar systems or populated planets, is that in the distant past, we don't know how far past, maybe 500,000 years, maybe a couple million years, there may have been the equivalent of a civil war, a galactic civil war in our sector of the galaxy. Think of it sort of as Star Wars. I know that probably everybody has either heard of or has seen Star Wars. And so out of that, and in fact, the Star Wars series may contain kind of symbolic elements of our actual planetary history. What the quarantine is that apparently out of that, in order for to allow the aftermath of this civil war to sort of mend, our planet, perhaps other contiguous planets, other contiguous inhabited planets, have been placed under a form of quarantine whereby we're not aware. We're kind of like the Galapagos Islands of our sector of the universe. We're not aware that there is a whole populated universe going on around us, and we're sort of off limits to the rest of the galaxy to allow life here to kind of replenish itself and evolve. Now, there are a number of scientists that have come forth and confirmed this hypothesis in their own way. One of these was published in the British Journal of Interplanetary Science several years ago in a lead article by Dr. Hal Puthoff and Jim Dierdorf and others that put forth a model that said UFO encounters, they call them the leaky embargo, i.e. our planet is under an embargo from the rest of the galaxy because we're not as advanced and we're at a different stage of evolution than the more advanced civilizations, so as not to overpower us, they sort of have an information embargo, and that UFO encounters are like leaks of information to us. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. We'll be right back after the break.
It's the year 2007, and you're listening to Exopolitics Radio with Alfred Lambermont Weber on 1480 KPHX.
This is Exopolitics Radio, 1480 AM KPHX Phoenix, www.1480kphx.com on the internet. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. 2007 marks the 10th anniversary of the Phoenix Lights, witnessed by over 10,000 persons. Major media such as CNN, USA Today, Peter Jennings at ABC News, Tom Brokaw, Dan Rather, all covered the Phoenix Lights, which were a silent, mile-long, V-shaped formation of lights that glided at a slow, low altitude over Phoenix on the night of March 13, 1997. The city of Phoenix became a potential actor in exopolitics when the matter of the Phoenix Lights was brought before the City Council of Phoenix by Councilwoman Frances Barwood at an open meeting that was videotaped. Councilwoman Barwood held several public meetings attended by a concerned public. She wrote Arizona U.S. Senator John McCain, now rumored to be a U.S. presidential candidate for the 2008 presidential election. Senator McCain apparently mailed a misleading letter to the U.S. Archives stating that, quote, a constituent had raised the issue of the Phoenix Lights when it was a Phoenix City Councilwoman who was also the assistant mayor of the city of Phoenix who has raised this issue. The then governor of Arizona, Fife Symington, also held a press conference with an obedient staff member in a bogus extraterrestrial craft, what we in the exopolitics field call disinformationalists, playing what is known commonly as the ha-ha game, i.e. ridiculing the presence of potential off-planet cultures on Earth through a technology of scorn and ridicule. Well, as they say, what goes around comes around, and we are now 10 years from that evening on March 13, 1997, and we are joined by perhaps one of the leading world's experts on the Phoenix Lights, Dr. Lynn Kitai, who was chief clinical consultant at the world-renowned Arizona Heart Institute's Imaging Prevention Wellness Center in Phoenix, Arizona, until coming forward with the Phoenix Lights Project. She's a key witness to the still unexplained mass sightings that took place through Arizona on March 13, 1997. And after years of private research and continued sightings of anomalous phenomena, Dr. Kitai feels it is imperative to share the riveting data she has compiled in her best-selling book, The Phoenix Lights, A Skeptic's Discovery That We Are Not Alone, Hampton Roads Publishing, and her internationally award-winning documentary, The Phoenix Lights 2005. We're very happy to welcome her here to Exopolitics Radio and KPHX. Welcome, Dr. Lynn.
Thank you so much for having me. It's very ironic, first of all, that I'm even here talking about exopolitics because I've never gotten involved with politics. But here we are with the situation. And let me clarify that we call it the Phoenix Lights, but in fact, on March 13th, 1997, while thousands of people happened to be looking up at the sky for a glimpse of the Hale-Bopp comet, which was very clear in the northwest sky on a very quiet, beautiful March evening, they also witnessed a mile to 2 mile wide, as some very credible witnesses have shared, formation of light. Some people say that they actually saw a craft traverse right over their heads, about 30 miles an hour, like gliding right over their heads, very low altitude. Some people did see it take off at a tremendous speed. Incredible technology, to be sure. And what was very eerie for most people was that it was totally silent. It was just very a phenomenal parade that went through the state from upstate Arizona all the way down to Tucson and then back to Phoenix. And this is over very many, many, many hours. The bulk of the reports came in over a 2-3 hour period between 8 and 11 that evening because most people were outside and most people were looking up at the sky because it was dark at that time. But we have reports from 5 p.m. to as late as 2 a.m., not only throughout Arizona, but I also have reports now, and they keep coming in, by the way. I just got another report a couple weeks ago from a tour guide that was on a bus with a whole busload of people that saw the mass sighting in 97, just getting in touch with me now. But I've also gotten contacts from pilots who saw them near Las Vegas, as well as Native Americans that saw them in New Mexico around the same time, earlier and later that night. So it really was a parade coming throughout the state, and it seems that whoever did this wanted to be seen. So it was very strange that after this happened and really affected many, many people at a very, very deep level, because this was something so extraordinary and so mind-boggling that most people couldn't even conceive of it. Some people buried it for months. And when they started seeing some reports on TV 3, 6, even years later, suddenly they realized, oh my goodness, I did see that. So it really affected people very, very deeply. And now we're still talking about it, which is very exciting, and I'm thrilled to be part of this because I stayed anonymous. As you know, we can get into that story because I had a very close sighting with my husband, who's also a physician, 2 years prior to the mass sighting, got pictures of that experience, and this was very close. This was in a private gated, nestled in the mountains community, where in my estimation, I don't believe military would be there in any case. And here I took pictures of these orbs, these amber orbs that some people, by the way, during the mass sighting saw detach from the main object, go out into the environment, and then redock with it. And my pictures I have an incredible collection of photographs at this point, but the first and the last of a sighting that I had 2 months before the mass sighting as well show that the same formation was in the same location 2 years prior when I took pictures of the close sighting. The same formation is in the background in those pictures as well. So could that have happened? Could these orbs have detached from the main object and come closer to where we were? I don't know. It sure seems that way. And the photographs cannot be explained or denied.
Right. And you mentioned both in your book, The Phoenix Lights, and in your documentary that you have gone to technical laboratories such as Village Labs in Tempe and other labs so as to have a rigorous level of scientific testing. I wondered if you could share with us and our listeners a bit of the scientific rigor and also the discussions with air traffic controllers and other military personnel.
Absolutely. What's ironic as well is that, number one, I do nothing about this topic at all. When my husband and I had, neither of us did, when we had the close sighting. So when I had these pictures, I didn't even know who to show them to. I knew no one that was interested in the topic. I just knew what I saw was extraordinary technology. I didn't know we had these orbs that could hover in a triangle pyramid formation for a time. And I call them orbs because the light was self-contained. They did not extend outside the edge of each object. And they were about 3 to 6 feet each. I really took note of everything mentally because I was standing there watching this thing. And I thought if I move, I might miss something. And the light within each orb was very different than any light that I'd ever seen. It didn't glare at all. It was very mesmerizing. And I knew if I didn't get a picture of it, that no one would believe it. So I ran to the closet to get my 35 millimeter. And as I did, my husband called me back to our bedroom window, which is a whole wall is a window. So we get to see a panoramic view of the city skyline. And when something strange like this pops up, we get to see it if we happen to be in the room. And we both watched the top orb disappear in place. It didn't budge as if it was still there after it disappeared. And I got onto the balcony, took a picture of the two lower orbs. And it seemed that there was an intelligence watching. It took me years to share that with anyone, but it actually felt that there was an intelligence watching and going through my head. I was thinking, who are you? What are you? Do you know that I'm here? I'd love to meet you. And the next thing I remember, the left bottom orb started to disappear, and I took a quick picture of that. But again, I didn't know who to even show it to and wondered for 2 years why this technology was outside our window, why I happened to get a picture of it. And so forth. And then 2 months before the mass sighting, these lights came back again, but at a distance. And they were in different formations. And as a scientist, I felt compelled to document them. It was just so curious and so different that I started documenting them on 35 millimeter and video, the second night of which was a huge formation. It looked like it was over a mile wide, according to the landscape, of these orbs in an equidistant line head on. and then turning into a V-shape. I got 6 pictures in a row. The first and the second one are on my website, www.thephoenixlights.net, if anyone wants to take a peek at them. And it was so unnerving because it was such a huge formation. I had not had the sighting explained to me from 2 years prior. So I started making calls, and I did find air traffic controllers at Sky Harbor International Airport. They saw the same thing. They were aghast that I had seen them as well. It was in restricted airspace. That's really important to note. Did not show up on radar. They picked up their binoculars because it was so strange. And in their own words, what they described were 6 points of light that seemed to be attached to something, but they couldn't quite see what it was attached to, moving slowly in tandem, in synchrony, behind South Mountain, right behind the airport. And when I asked the air traffic controller what he thought they were, there was complete silence. And then he says, beats me. And I said, you're an air traffic controller. You're supposed to know what's in our airspace. And he was just as curious as I was. And so were the other air traffic controllers that did see it. And we kept in contact. I continued taking pictures of these orbs in different formations, actually the month of January 1997. And they stopped February 1st. And it's very curious as well that when I did get into my intensive investigation to try to find a logical source and meaning for what I witnessed and photographed, I found that on February the 19th, 1997, 1 month before our mass sighting, in St. Petersburg, Russia, they had a very similar mass sighting, and a couple of people got video, which is identical to my pictures. So put that in the mix. And then March 1st, these lights started again, and I started documenting them again. And March 13th was like another evening for me. And suddenly the same formation shot up in the same location as 2 months prior, and I got video, one of the handful of signature videos from that evening, of the 3 points of light, like a giant triangle over the city. To answer your question, I didn't know what to do with what I had, quite frankly. I gave the video. I wanted to stay out of the media. I wanted to stay anonymous, but certainly wanted others to see what we had seen. So I handed the video off to an investigator. And a week later, I find that my video has been all over. Several other videos came out that were amazing as well. And here's my video on TV news, and they're interviewing what supposedly was a lab, Jim Dellatoso, who was a investigator for over 20 years, also a computer specialist and many other things. He's been around for a long time doing analyzation of other UFO, unexplained phenomena, objects in the lab. And he's right there near ASU in Tempe. And he's showing not only my video, but also other pictures from around the world of these amber orbs and triangle formations. That blew me away. I had no idea this was happening worldwide. That was the first I had heard of it. And at that point, I knew I needed to show him the pictures that I had. And at that point, I started my own investigation and started keeping a very, very intricate journal. As a scientist, again, I wanted to find a logical explanation for what I witnessed and photographed. And if anything, my meticulous inquiry really opened up a whole new world to me that inevitably, after pushing my entire professional life aside for 4 years, ended up with a 750-page journal of fascinating, intriguing, and compelling data, not only continued photographing these objects and phenomena myself, but I was finding out that it was happening worldwide. Other countries are much more open to it as being unearthly. Russia's been studying it for 20, 30 years. China has an elite group of scientists studying these phenomena. Belgium, when they were having their similar sightings in the early 90s, came to the United States and said, are you doing this? And the United States flatly denied that we were. And also went to different universities for analyzation as well, went to the University of Arizona Optical Science Department, Consciousness Study Department, Arizona State University, Geology, Mathematics, Anthropology, and Mathematics. I mean, just really trying to search for an answer, as well as the Brooks Institute of Photography. And I have to tell you that across the board, not only were the scientists and the professors just fascinated with the data that I had accumulated, but they didn't know what to do with it. We seem not to have the technology yet to definitively define what these things are, but that doesn't mean they're not real. And also across the board, I became aware that no one ever in history has taken 35mm and video from the same vantage point prior to, during, and after an historic mass sighting. So here I am with all this data, a 750-page journal 4 years later, went back to work at the Arizona Heart Institute and had to decide what I was going to do with this material. And I have to tell you, in good conscience, it came to the realization that I couldn't just stick it in a drawer. It's just too important to impart. And if it is real, and from every indication and from continued sightings, something is visiting us. And certainly on March 13th, 1997, the bottom line there is, again, whoever did this wanted to be seen. And around the world, they're trying to wake us up to their presence and the implications and the message that has been given worldwide as well is extremely important. And that was another reason that I felt inevitably that I needed to come forward with this information, which I did in 2004.
We'll be right back with our guest, Dr. Lynn Kitai, on Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. Welcome back to Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. We're with Dr. Lynn Kitai. Now, just in the spirit of Occam's razor, which as a scientist you know is that the simplest explanation is the most plausible one, there have been a number of articles, one from an institution called NIDS, and a number of other commentators who have looked at what they call the black triangle phenomenon that was especially prevalent during the late 90s, and that is the appearance of very large flying black triangles with lights associated with them. I think that one of the examples that they mentioned was the Belgian sighting, and if you go up to the NIDS report, people can find that at www.ufoevidence.org. What they conclude, they look at various options and they say, is this an extraterrestrial craft? Is it a secret U.S. government craft? Or is it a secret craft of some entity other than the U.S. government?
Mm-hmm.
However, I took a look at those articles in preparation for this program, and the black triangles that they're discussing there in the late 90s are smaller than the apparent craft that some witnesses saw, which was, I believe you said, what, a mile on the side?
Actually, we had very credible witnesses out, several. But one of them in particular, a couple that was out in Carefree, they're realtors. They're also involved with Mensa. They're really credible witnesses that said that they were out in a field that had stakes for a new development, and this thing went right over them. And they estimated from the stakes that were in the ground that it was closer to 2 miles wide. And there were other witnesses as well that were coming up I-10, which is the road. I mean, this thing went down the most populated central corridor of Arizona, including right above I-10, and these witnesses, and there are several of them, saw the wings of this object on both sides of both highways into the land on either side, and they estimated it was closer to 2 miles wide. So we're talking about something that is just so incredibly huge that it's just unfathomable that we have this, but I have to say, I have always left the door open. Most things can be explained, but there are a small percentage of things that cannot. And just because we might not be able to definitively define what these things are, it doesn't mean it's not real. But the concerning thing for me is if it was military, and, you know, I again, stay away from military and politics, and I'm doing my own thing to raise awareness of the general public. And certainly part of this as a physician is there's a lot of healing to be done here because a lot of people have had experiences that are real to them. And it's comforting for them to know that we can finally talk about it. So that's something we might want to get into. But as far as if the military did this on March 13th, 1997, and then totally denied it totally denied it for months until a USA Today article came out, which kind of changed the atmosphere a little bit, because now we were deluged by 5 months later by media from all over the world. And I have to say, it's concerning if it was military and then they denied it. And then suddenly, when all these media converge on Arizona and start to talk to the witnesses, and once you do speak with witnesses that saw this up close and personal, not only the detail, but the heartfelt emotions that happened, they turned to the military and government and said, why isn't there an investigation? Why isn't there an explanation? And then suddenly, about a month later, we find out that they're announcing that the Air National Guard came into Arizona from Maryland, and nobody happened to look at the log to see that, and they sent off some flares, and that must be what some people saw. Now, I have to say that I don't doubt that if all this was going on, they were quite aware of it, and we do have a recorded report at the National UFO Reporting Center. Peter Davenport took a call in the middle of the night about 3 a.m. from an alleged crewman from Luke Air Force Base, that they were very aware of this, and that jets were sent out to take gun camera film and to intercept it. And as they got close to this object right over the middle of Phoenix, this is 7th Avenue and Indian School, the object just blinked out and totally freaked the pilot. This crewman said that he was one of the people that helped the pilot out of the aircraft. So when all these puzzle pieces start fitting together, again, I don't doubt that flares were sent somewhere to get the eyes off of the real unknown or confuse the issue. But I have to say, myself and others, and again, I saw it very close myself, the same phenomena, very similar phenomena, that there may be other explanations other than flares. I mean, it certainly, they tried to confuse the issue, but people weren't buying it. People that saw the real phenomena the night of March 13th, 1997, have continued to. I mean, these sightings are continuing. I've taken pictures myself, and that's a whole other story. But the fact is that they're happening worldwide, other countries and cultures, even right here. Now, the Native Americans that live right here, in fact, the bulk of my pictures seem to be showing up in the same general area. And the area seems to be in between two mountain ranges. There's two mountain ranges that intersect at a point. They're a distance from each other, but from my vantage point, they intersect at a point, South Mountain and the Estrellas. And by the way, the Estrella means star in Spanish. So how did it get its name in the first place? But there is a Native American reservation, very sacred ground, in between these two mountain ranges. And from my vantage point, it seemed that these objects kept showing up there. And serendipitously, I had presented, I should mention this because that was another reason that I felt compelled to come forward. My life's work for the last 30 years has been community education of vital health issues. I have a company, Health Education Learning Programs, Help Incorporated, that produces video and workbook curriculums for the classroom, K on through college, on vital health issues, prevention education of AIDS, teen pregnancy, substance abuse, the reality of these subjects for youth. And now being distributed by Discovery Education. Very proud of that, and they've won all kinds of awards. But the point is, I really felt obliged to share this vital information and the reality of these phenomena with the public. And it just so happens that 6 months before the mass sighting, the Gila Bend River Indian Reservation invited me to speak there and present my substance abuse program. And I chatted with a few of the people there. And so after the mass sighting, it was very easy for me to just call them up and ask them if they actually saw the mass sighting. And they started to laugh. And I said, is that funny? And they said, are you kidding? We've been looking up at them for centuries. We call them sky people. They're light beings. And they feel that it's part of their culture.
Very interesting.
Yes, it is. It's fascinating. And I knew nothing about that either. So that really blew me away, that here is a culture right here that has been seeing these for centuries.
Yes, yes, right. The exopolitics model, of course, this is Exopolitics Radio. And what exopolitics is, it's the science of relations between our human culture and the culture of possible advanced intelligent off-planet cultures. So if we're looking at the evidence that you just mentioned for the Phoenix Lights, including that report that we had from the one person from Luke Air Force Base, of course, which is a call-in. Apparently that person wasn't interviewed in depth.
They tried, by the way. They tried to find him again. And the last thing that Peter Davenport heard was that he was shipped off to Greenland.
Yeah, yes, right. So that here we have a pattern in which apparently many off-planet craft, or what we can call extraterrestrial craft or ultra-dimensional craft, have the ability to shift back and forth between dimensions. In other words, sort of energy spheres. We're in a particular energy spectrum here on Earth. You know, the table that we have right in front of us and the chair that we're sitting on is actually mostly empty space. It's just energy patterns. And so what the craft did, if this report is true, when jets were scrambled at it to photograph it, it just shifted into another dimension. And this is how these advanced craft work.
Absolutely. Yeah, I have to share too, Alfred, that you bring up a really good point, because now we know, I mean, astrophysicists and other physicists certainly are feeding into the thoughts of quantum mechanics and quantum physics. There are many different dimensions. And, you know, just knowing that and the possibility of other times and spaces being all around us, but in our human bodies, we only get to see what we see or get glimpses of these other dimensions via out-of-body experience, near-death experience, unexplained aerial phenomena. Once you start really looking into the data, it just confirms that more and more and more. And even when we had our close sighting, and I always go back to that, because even if they discover that the Phoenix Lights event was military, which again is quite doubtful, but hey, again, I'm open. I've always been a healthy skeptic. One must be when you're in medicine. But on the other hand, I did see phenomena up close. And when they disappeared, I have to share that it seemed like it was still there, that as they were disappearing without budging, they were just dimming into another dimension. And that was the feeling. And I'm just being open about that. So what you're saying may be very, very true. I mean, it's very possible that the universe is teeming with life. I mean, we know now how tenable life is right here on Earth, in the hot springs of Yellowstone to the frozen lakes of the Arctic. And also that we're a very young planetary system. Our galaxy, our one Milky Way galaxy, and we don't know how many trillions there may be out there, but our one galaxy is 12 to 14 billion years old. Our solar system is a very young solar system. It's only 4 to 6 billion years old. And there are many scientists now postulating that there could be intelligent entities. And I've never said what these things are. I'm just saying that they are. And it's time we get it out in the open and we address it and accept it and study it and move forward. But these scientists are now postulating that there could be intelligent entities out there, billions of years ahead of us, billions of years ahead of us. And it took us 17 centuries, think about how long that is, for humankind to realize with the advent of the microscope that there are zillions of tiny microorganisms all around us, even in our bodies. We wake up with 600,000 types of bacteria in our mouth every morning. It's just mind-boggling how many other living entities there might be out there that we just don't see with our human eyes. And just recently, we discovered electromagnetic energies around every living cell that helped us develop the MRI, the magnetic resonance imaging machine, to detect disease non-invasively. Well, just because we can't see these tiny living organisms, or electromagnetic energies or radio waves or whatever, doesn't mean it's not real.
You know, I know that you now are going to be doing a whole number of public events in commemoration and in celebration of the 10th anniversary of the Phoenix Lights. And what we here at Exopolitics Radio would like to do is to stay in touch with you very closely and to have you back maybe from time to time so that we can see how the Phoenix Lights, which were a very major public display of either an extraterrestrial craft or an advanced human craft, or maybe an advanced human / extraterrestrial craft, because we know by the evidence that there have been secret human extraterrestrial liaison programs for at least the past 50 years. And
put in time travelers. That's a possibility, too.
Yeah, sure. So we're kind of in this sandbox that we're waking up now. Exopolitics is a new political science. It's the political science of outer space. It's giving us the who, what, when, where, and why, you know. So we really appreciate your coming here. We've come to the end of this altogether too short interview, but we're constrained by the time format of our program, and we want to invite you back.
Well, I thank you so much.
Oh, certainly. We've been with, I think we just scratched the surface, Doctor.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot more to this story than March 13. And if you read the book, I find a connection between all unexplained phenomena that I call an up, because the positive transformation and the awakening and the enlightenment, which you're helping with, I mean, this is wonderful, raising awareness, letting people just open their eyes to what's in front of us. And everybody comes from a different place, a different background, a different upbringing, a different belief system. So some people, it's going to take longer than others. Some people will feed into the flare theory if it gives them comfort to feed into a logical explanation. That's okay. But the information is there, and I do hope that people will open the book and hopefully see the documentary to learn and to grow.
We have been with our special guest, Dr. Lynn Kitai. Her website is www.thephoenixlights.net. Her book is The Phoenix Lights, A Skeptic's Discovery That We Are Not Alone, Hampton Roads Publishing, and her award-winning documentary, The Phoenix Lights. This is Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber. We'll be right back after the break. We're back again on Exopolitics Radio. I'm your host, Alfred Weber.
Alfred remarks on his experiences with extraterrestrials.
Both my co-director and Dr. Carol Rosen at the Institute for Cooperation in Space and myself agreed to sort of keep the attention away from ourselves and not to draw the attention to ourselves, but rather to talk about the phenomenon. And so I approach the issue of extraterrestrial civilizations as a futurist, as a cosmic citizen, as a human being. And I talk to and interact with and many people who have had direct encounters and interaction with extraterrestrial beings. I have studied that for over 30 years, but I sort of keep my own personal experiences out of the picture to keep as much objectivity as possible in my work. Thank you for listening to this first inaugural episode of Exopolitics Radio. We hope you've enjoyed our views on the Phoenix Lights. And coming up over the next four programs, you can expect Stephen Bassett on the 2008 U.S. presidential campaign, Terry Mansfield, director of the Arizona Department of Peace campaign on the Phoenix Lights, and on how peace and extraterrestrials go together, Dr. Michael Sala on the U.S. black budget, and we'll tell you a bit more about the mystery behind the Chicago O'Hare sighting and what it truly means in our first official Exopolitics Radio commentary. We look forward to your being with us again in our forthcoming programs as Exopolitics Radio launches us into the 21st century. Thank you.